Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore positively getting us through the holidays here. Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road, brought to you by our friends at GBMC and the Maryland Lottery. Crab cakes, crab dip. I'm going to be doing it all. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Gina Shock will join us next week at Costas. We're going to be out at Planet Fitness in Timonium on the 22nd. Check it out. It is the holidays. Part of my holiday spirit here, especially when our football team stinks and our baseball team hasn't done much, is to invite people on that I want to have on through the holidays who are like authors and they write books. Like I wrote Purple Rain 1 and 2. We had so much fun with the Purple Rain guys coming in here this week. This guy hasn't been on this year. He's one of the real deep divers in football. Has written great, great books. I have a copy of It's Better to Be Feared, but I lent it out to Luke Jones. I would hold it up here. American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Seth Wickersham, our defending champion. You know, I don't get a lot of Alaskans, you know, on the program. So anytime I can get the guy with the rock and roll guitars behind me, writing great books, and I'm sure you're working on another one. How are you, man? Happy holidays to you. Happy football season.
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
Well, better than the Ravens are doing right now, and certainly as we get up on this. And you know, you've written Patriots books. Who knew they would be coming back to haunt us again here this quickly? But when you talk about the biography of quarterbacks, we clearly have one here. And when your quarterback's gimpy, can't get out of the lane, doesn't have an offensive line, maybe that's the underrated thing. Every offensive lineman I've ever met has told me the offensive line's underrated. But you know, as your quarterback goes, you go. And if your quarterback doesn't go, you don't go.
Well, I think that like that's largely true at all levels. But I'm happy to get into to diagnose the Ravens issues. But what I was trying to do with the book was get it what it means to do this uniquely American job. It's not really something you don't play quarterback, you are one. It's kind of a lifestyle. And there are 16,000 starting high school quarterbacks, in America in any given year. There's 958, I think, at the highest level of college, 32 in the NFL, 10 good ones, three future Hall of Famers at any given time. So what does it take to go from 16,000 to three? And those are the things I tried to get at the book.
You know, what's interesting to me is that Brian Billick was my business partner for a long time. He would always bring the
Yeah.
Super Bowl ring out and give speeches. And he would always put the ring out and say, "You see that Super Bowl ring? They tell you that when you win, they can never take it away from you, but that won't stop them from trying." And I was with Trent Dilfer the other night. So
Right.
I bring that up, a former colleague of yours as well. You know, there is a point where, like, the notion of the Tom Brady's and the Patrick Mahomes, and even in my town, Johnny Unitas, or even Joe Flacco, who's yeah, he's won the Super Bowl, but he's not going to the Hall of Fame, let alone Nick Foles or, you know, any numbers of the Phil Simmses and,
Yeah.
you know, people that came before. But there is something about winning the Super Bowl or losing it if you're Cam Newton or if you're Donovan McNabb or whatever. It really is amazing how elevated you become. But even our two Super Bowl quarterbacks, Flacco and Dilfer, they're not going to the Hall of Fame. So they're considered a little bit more tarnished than the perfection, even if Dan Marino who never won, right?
Well, I think that like it is interesting because, first of all, yeah, you do have those guys who are kind of like one-off guys, right? Like Sims. And then, you have your guys like Dilfer who are kind of looked at as they won the Super Bowl in spite of themselves for whether that's fair or not. And then, I think that Flacco will get a look at the Hall of Fame. I mean, he made the decisive throws in that playoff run. And I think that like, even though he had a little bit of a morass in his late 30s, he's clearly found a career renaissance. So, he'll get a look, but it is fascinating. Like I was in Palo Alto a couple weeks ago and I did an event for this book and some other quarterbacks were there from the area. And one of them was Jim Plunkett. And it was just fascinating to be around him, hear his stories, because 13 quarterbacks have won two Super Bowls as the starter, and he's one of them, and he's probably not getting in. You know what I mean? And Eli Manning is kind of the closest comparison to him, and Eli will probably get in, I'm guessing, but Plunkett has two, and he won't get in. And so it was interesting to kind of hear it about what Super Bowls mean to him as someone who, isn't using them as an elevation of their resume, and also, like, no one's I think that there was a purity to it that I thought was really interesting in the way that he described what it meant to win two. Because for him, it's not like the continuation of a dynasty in the way that it might have been for Brady or for Patrick Mahomes. It's very isolated and contained and interesting, given that, like, there's one of him right now. There aren't that many people who can relate to his exact experience. In fact, there's nobody. And that was fascinating to kind of learn about and hear.
I think there's also something different too about being a 1-1, right? And the level of what you're supposed to be when you're the first pick in the draft, and when it either happens for you or doesn't happen for you or it takes forever. And then there's Kurt Warner and Tom Brady, right? It just in our era alone, and how many Jamarcus Russells and how many top 10 quarterbacks, how many Joey Harringtons, how many Trent Dilfers, how many of those kinds of guys. And Trent Dilfer's different. He won. I'd never take that away from him. But like guys that didn't win, or guys that didn't hang, or Kyle Bowler, guys didn't make it in our franchise here, versus Kurt Warner and Tom Brady, and then finding this amazing success when Ryan Leaf couldn't and didn't, right? And to me, the Kurt Warner thing's even more amazing because he had that second renaissance that got him in. But there's a guy that was bagging groceries famously, and Tom Brady's famously a guy that, every team in the league looked over six times and said, nah, don't need him.
Yeah, there was an era that was kind of around that time. So it was like Warner, Brady, Jake Delhomme was another one of them. Mark Bulger, for those who really want a deep cut, he had some really good years where it's like quarterbacks seem to be coming out of nowhere. And it's like, it was no longer people like Kurt Warner and Brady no longer be, there was like a norm to them. And I thought that was like a fascinating time because it was just a huge indictment of the way that we scouted quarterbacks and looked at them and considered them and, wrote them off. And, you're right. I mean, I think that like in 1999, what Kurt Warner did is still ridiculous to go back and look at. Right. I mean, he threw more touchdown passes in a season than Joe Montana and John Elway ever did.
I
And
remember
he,
Vermeil crying. I was at the first game he ever played. It was the beginning of the Billick era. It was Billick's first game as the coach in St. Louis in the Dome, and Vermeil was crying on the podium because he lost his starting quarterback and thought, I got a guy who's bagging groceries here. I mean, it's fairy tale. It's the greatest football story I think of my lifetime in regard to your point, the biography of he looks like Johnny Bravo getting off the bus. He has to look a certain way. And Russell Wilson certainly didn't have that. And I'll get to Lamar in a minute, too, because every team in the league passed on Lamar twice now, right?
Yeah, but I think that like, what's generally happened in the wake of that is that the best quarterbacks end up being, the ones who are expected to be great. I mean, like there are little exceptions here and there, but for the most part, after that kind of run at the early part of the century, most of the good quarterbacks in the NFL are first round picks. And they were the guys who, were invested in by their teams. But it is fascinating. And then of course you have like the other guys who were kind of cast-offs, right? They were early picks in systemically bad situations that they weren't able to overcome and kind of labeled as busts. And then they go on to produce pretty good careers elsewhere, like Geno Smith, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield to a certain extent, those types of guys. And so I think that like the moral of this story is that like even after all this time, we still don't know exactly what skills from the college game transfer to the program. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One of them is the hash marks in college and the ways that smart coaches in college have figured out ways to exploit the extra space that the college game has that the NFL game doesn't. And so, I think that like we see a lot of performance inflation in college where some of these guys like Bailey Zappe owns the record for most touchdown passes in a season. And here's a guy who can barely hang on in the NFL. But, we still don't know exactly what combination of, the people who can handle the pro game, who can find and see and exploit the teeniest of windows. And, I think that context matters a lot. I think that like the situation that people go into matters a lot. Like, I think Bo Nix would be a good quarterback in the NFL no matter what, but I think the fact that he ended up in Sean Payton's system allows him to be a quarterback who, helped the team to the playoffs as a rookie, and now, they've won, 10 in a row and look like they're headed to the number one seed. And I think that like to transition into Lamar Jackson, I think that like Lamar would have been a fantastic quarterback no matter what. But I think that given that he went to a team that knows how, that has a system, that has a program, and that knows how to coach and develop the position, I think mattered a lot for him. I mean, I still think that like one of the most underappreciated transitions is that the Ravens went from Flacco to Lamar, two completely different styles of quarterbacks in a very seamless way. Not a lot of teams are able to do that.
Seth Wickersham is our guest. The book is American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Nobody writes him like Seth. It's Better to Be Feared, a whole bunch of other books. You can go check him out and his work at the ESPN over a long, long period of time, and a real journalist. So I always appreciate my time with you. I'll bring Silver on to talk about how Brock Purdy did it so we can do the other side too. But the Lamar thing, from the beginning, it's curious, right? Like all the way through, because you can't talk about the biography of the quarterback without talking about my buddy John Eisenberg's book, which was they were all tall and white, and they could all throw the ball to the moon, right? So there was that forever. And then Michael Vick, I mean, my guy Shaq Harris, and Warren Moon, certainly, who had to go to Canada and do it at the highest level to come back and go to the Hall of Fame, still didn't win a Super Bowl. So Lamar's chasing that down at this point. And to your point, listen, I could put a lot of warts on Harbaugh and talk about how if the Mile High Miracle didn't happen, he certainly still wouldn't be the coach. But a lot of things that have transpired, but the if Harbaugh goes to the Hall of Fame and you're sitting in there and making a case one way or another, you'd say he talked revolution back in 18 and 19, like a different kind of game. Not everybody was down with that, Seth. Nobody wanted him, and if they took him, they wanted to be a running back or a slot or a slash or a wide receiver, play like Cordell Stewart or do what Hines Warren did, take a different role. There were a lot of teams that didn't see that role for him for whatever reason. And then there's, well, if I take him, I got to change everything. We got to play like a college team or play like a hybrid team. I got to have different guards, different wide receivers. They have Willie Snead around here as a wide receiver at the beginning just because he blocked really well, which is what they needed in 18 and 19 and 20 early on. But they have not just embraced Lamar, but to your point, had to build a completely different kind of draft system, free agents, what's valuable to them. And then they came to Jesus, quite frankly, said, we got to get Derrick Henry. And the last couple of years is when I've believed in it even more. And I guess with health and offensive line and how much money you have, but the notion that you would change the way you're going to play the game is something the Ravens did that not everybody's willing to do, play the RPO game and think you could win. And they won a lot of games here that way.
Yeah, so I reported in my Patriots book, how interested the Patriots were in Lamar Jackson in that draft. And then Belichick wrote a book. He did like kind of a business type of book that came out the past year. And in it, he talked about their interest in Lamar and how at the end of the day, they thought it was too much to try to have Lamar on the roster and have Tom Brady and have to run two completely different styles of offense at that time. And, that's what the Ravens were able to do, which is really fascinating. So that challenge, I think that like fans might hear it and think, what's the big deal? But like if someone like Bill Belichick saw that challenge is too much for what they were trying to accomplish at that time, too much for the plans that they had. And a team like the Ravens, took it on and executed it so seamlessly, I think, shows, just how good that staff is there and, obviously how good Lamar Jackson
Well, there's not going to be any regrets about drafting Lamar. There might be some regrets
is.
about what you put around him, certainly from the offensive line part this week. As we start to it starts to fall apart, certainly this season.
Well, I think that, and I think that like, the other regret is that is cosmic, and that's that the Kansas City Chiefs have existed. And we look at the Ravens and we look at the Bills, and it's like everything they do during the regular season is kind of, I don't, it's not worthless. Like, that's not the right word, but it's like it's all prelude. And it's hard to watch those teams and not, think, look, it's great that you guys produce this type of regular season in so many fantastic moments, whatever it might be. But like, January is when it matters for them, and that's the definition of their season. And that's a tough way to go through, to be like the Indiana Pacers of this era, who are just unable to get through the Chicago Bulls. That's a tough way to go through the season. I guess that like that's in one sense they'd have it no other way. But when I watch them, that's kind of what I think about. And I think that Lamar Jackson has put together some good playoff performances. That if things had gone a little bit differently, they have a chance to like move on and, perhaps compete, win a championship. But like, that's the curse of this era for them, I think, is just that like they've been spectacular, but the Chiefs have been better. And that's how we're going to remember this era unless something changes drastically for both the Ravens and the Chiefs.
I
I
think when
mean,
I
and the
think of
Bills,
the,
and the Bills, I'm
I
sorry.
think of the Chiefs in this era, I think, I talk about Tyreek Hill or talk about even the defense of Chris Jones and what Spagnuolo's represented and the players they've had there, but there's always been this problem on the offensive line there, right? I mean, we're going back 4 or 5 years where it's like, is it good enough? Can they patch it together? That's been the Bengals' issue since they got Burrow, and right now that's the Ravens' issue in the middle of all of this. Is and look, I'm 30 years into covering the league and, talking about it day and night, writing books like you and, on it. The offensive line, and I joke about it, every offensive line I've ever known, offensive lineman I've known would say to me, it all starts on the O-line. They told me that back in 96. Steve Everett told me that when they got off the boat here, John Ogden playing guard. When you don't have it, the symphony's not the same. And that's if you're Tom Brady in Tampa, if you're Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, if you're Lamar Jackson in the prime of your career here with all of this talent around you, time and confidence and the safety of my line's going to hold however long, a second, two, three, however long I need. I think the evolution of the game and one of the successes of Brady and Manning was reading defenses, just getting rid of the ball. You couldn't sack them. You just could not sack them. That's a different kind of style than what they've than what Lamar's playing right now. Certainly in grounding things out. No O-line, you're not going to win, or you're going to really be hampered as the Kansas City Chiefs have been in this era, that they might have won them all if they had the focus on the offensive line, let's say the Joe Andrewsies of the world that that Belichick had put together through that period of time.
Well, it's a great equalizer, is that like everybody has the same amount of money to spend. And I get into the mythology of the quarterback in the book quite a bit, but we're so excited about quarterbacks, and that a good quarterback can inspire so much hope that we and when you watch the greats in certain moments, it's like they take over the game. And it's almost enough to dupe us into thinking that they can cover up for anything when, context does matter. And like you do need good personnel around you. Like people always talk about system quarterbacks, like it's like a, and it's kind of a slight, right? That this guy is a system quarterback when like every quarterback to a certain extent is a system quarterback. Like John Elway is the least system quarterback ever. And yet, look at his numbers under Dan Reeves, and then look at them versus his offenses with Wade Phillips and Mike Shanahan. I mean, it's completely different. And I think that, like, the offensive line is like is an unbelievably critical part of that. And
Or it doesn't take a play off.
no, I mean, and also just like again, we think that. That quarterbacks can cover up anything, but they do need good players around them. And I think that like what you mentioned with the Patriots and what Peyton Manning did late in his career, I think was fascinating because they got older, they didn't want to get hit. And so they had to get rid of the ball quickly, and they did it almost all by pre-snap diagnosis, by looking at the matchups, looking at the defense, looking at what they know, and determining that there was, a primary receiver on the play. And if that guy wasn't open, they were looking at the outlet. If the outlet was covered, they were throwing the ball away and living to fight the next day. I have this scene in my book, rewind back to 1992, I think. Mike Shanahan, whose son Kyle now coaches the Niners, had just gotten to the 49ers and was their offensive coordinator. And he was trying to learn the Bill Walsh West Coast offense. And Joe Montana was at the 49ers at the time, but he was injured. And he knew that the coaches kind of wanted to move on from him. And then you have Steve Young, who was playing at an MVP level, but was still kind of looked at by the fan base as underachieving relative to Joe Montana. So it was a really interesting situation for him to walk into. And so Shanahan got there and he asked to spend time with every quarterback for 2 days alone in the offseason, Young, Montana, and Steve Bono. And he wanted to learn about each quarterback and learn about how they saw the offense. And after he had done it, he called Joe Montana back in and he said, "Joe, we have to go through this again. You look at the offense differently than everybody else. I don't understand." And Montana was kind of like, "I was kind of hoping you wouldn't notice that," because he didn't trust anybody at the building at that point in his career. And he said, "Look, I can explain things, but we got to keep it here. You can't give my edge away." And so Shanahan said, "I promise." And Montana, told him how he saw the game. And that's that, like, he didn't see the game through the pure progression offense that Bill Walsh had drawn up, that had revolutionized football, greatest offense that anybody had ever seen. And yet here was Joe Montana saying, like, "I don't really go according to how Walsh drew it up. I go according to what the defense is doing, and I know where everyone is going to be. And my edge over Steve Young is that he does it as Bill Walsh drew it up. And because of that, he holds the ball too long and he's getting hit or he's fumbling or he's taking unnecessary sacks." And I think that, like, that's the difference between great quarterback play and legendary artistry, which is what Joe Montana was doing. I think I see that a lot with a lot of quarterbacks. And, there's a magic to it, to learning how to get to that level, but there's also just, like, a lot of luck and reps and circumstance that matters. But, like, I think you start to see the leap that those guys make as quarterbacks when they start to see the game and react to what the defense is doing rather than how the head coach and the offensive coordinator drew up the plays.
Seth Wickersham is our guest. The book is American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Go pick it up, go read it, check him out on the internet. I would say for Aaron Rodgers, having come to Baltimore as a 42-year-old, broken nose, broken down, no offense, couldn't do anything last week, defense. Late first quarter, maybe early second quarter, he came up the line of scrimmage in the red zone and waited the clock, waited the clock, waited the clock, called audible at the line, put them in the motion, and the Ravens had to call a timeout. Now, Tony Romo, who's the smartest guy in the room, said, he had the safety pinch down on at the bottom of the screen. That was going to be a touchdown. Like, it was just going to be a t he saw what Aaron Rodgers saw as a quarterback that you and I are like, I don't know what he just saw, but he saw something. He's sitting up straight. And that's when the broadcast becomes great, when the game becomes great, and when I start to learn, because I tweeted out, Aaron Rodgers is still the smartest guy in the building. He just is, because he's done it more than anyone at a level. No, that's why he's going to the Hall of Fame. But that is his superpower.
It's an artistry. It's an artistry. And again, it's like, that's what separates guys, if you can ever get to that level. And I mean, Rodgers has had it for years. And, we should have mentioned him when we mentioned Peyton and Brady earlier. But, like, again, it's like you're seeing a fundamentally different game. And Steve Young talked about this, where it's like, if you can make that transition, if you can just survive all of the, landmines that are there to destroy your career, if you can just survive, the game becomes easier. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's easier. And,
Geno Smith, right, is a modern example, right?
And like, well, he I don't think he quite reached that level, but, like, yes, he's one of those guys who survived. But I think that, like, as we're looking towards the playoffs, look, I think that, like, Denver and New England, or New England and Denver, are going to be like the highest seeds. But underneath that, you have a lot of dangerous teams that maybe are going to sneak into the playoffs with not great records. So Pittsburgh, Baltimore, if they sneak in, even the Chiefs, if they sneak in, the Chargers. I mean, like, those teams are dangerous teams. And if I'm Denver or New England, it scares me a little bit to think about playing against those teams with those coaching staffs and those quarterbacks, Buffalo, too, where their regular season record wasn't great, but you get to the playoffs and they can be exceedingly dangerous, especially with nothing to lose.
But nothing scares you as much as Stafford, given, again, 1-1 experience, trying to win a second one, right? Like all that. And now cruising at a level that might not have been predicted of him, let's say after Jim Schwartz got fired in Detroit and it was sort of
Well,
get
that
going where it was going.
and I mean, that's in the NFC, but like, if you look at Stafford, like, again, he's at that level. I mean, he's the guy who's doing what Brady and Peyton and Aaron Rodgers did. You know, he's playing quarterback at a true artistry level, and I think that, like, that's what makes it so fascinating to watch. And there's so many things that have to go right. I mean, you have to have the right teammates, the right offense, you have to stay healthy, you have to learn from your mistakes and keep that drive, that competitive stamina going. But like, clearly those guys have it. And I was my one of my buddies texted me the other day that, like, you know, look, Patrick Mahomes' best football is behind him. That guy might still be the best player in the NFL for the rest of his career, but like, he'll never be as great as he was in 2022. And like, I think that, like, if people like Mahomes and Allen and Lamar and these guys can just keep hanging on and stay healthy, I'm fascinated to see what they do in their mid-30s when, like, the game becomes so much easier and they understand quarterbacking at a truly, truly, truly elite level. And that's not considered, I'm not trying to, like, slight them in any way. I'm just saying that, like, these guys who are great, like Jackson, like Allen, like Mahomes, if they can just keep learning and keep that drive and stay healthy and stay on decent teams, what they're going to be able to do in their 30s is going to be astounding, I think.
Seth, what are you doing in your spare time when you're not promoting American King's biography, The Quarterback, which you wrote earlier this year? You got another one? You got something in your up your sleeve? You're writing a Springsteen
Well,
book, maybe? No?
we'll see. I don't know about that, but like, I don't know if anyone would buy it. But like, I've got a collection of my ESPN stuff coming up next year. I've got some good ESPN stories coming that I'm excited about, and you know, I appreciate your time. It's always good to talk to
I love having you on, man.
you.
I love following you out on the. Keep giving some recommendations of this and that when you're out traveling the American dream of football. Seth Wickersham can be found out on the internet. The book is American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, and we just summed up pretty nice little 30-minute conversation about modern quarterbacking. Next time we'll just do offensive line. I'll bring Baldinger in or something like that because hey, you
Awesome.
can't win without an offensive line. Don't forget us guys. And I'm like, that's pretty much what the 2025 Ravens season's about at this point. So, always a pleasure, man. Hope to see you down the line. Be well.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for always taking my call. Seth Wickersham here. Go check his book out. No one writes him better than he does. You can find me out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at GBMC. Well, save me with the colonoscopy a couple weeks ago. I'm reminding everyone out there, do what you need to do. They're right around the corner. You got doctors. You have people to take good care of you over at GBMC. I'll be talking more about that into the new year as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.